Today, we're taking a shortcut past the traditional GPA and academic transcript to analyze something far more valuable, how a leading health sciences institution measures true ethical professional competence.
That's right. Our source material is a really fascinating case study looking at the assessment strategies used by the Doctor of Physical Therapy. That's the DPT program at Howard University. This comes from a presentation by their Director of Assessment, Dr. Pavithra Suresh, and their Director of Clinical Education, Dr. Sabrina Altema.
Okay, so our mission here is pretty simple, but I think really crucial. We want to dissect the blueprint of a program that doesn't just produce technically proficient students,
Right.
but genuinely effective practitioners who are ready to handle the messy reality of clinical work. How do you actually assess for things like confidence, ethics, and community commitment?
Well, it really starts with their philosophy. At Howard, all 14 schools and colleges are governed by something called the Howard Annual Assessment Process, or HAP.
Okay.
And this is a very robust process, apparently covering every single program, academic and administrative, and it's designed specifically for continuous improvement based on student learning outcomes.
Right, the SLOs. And just for anyone maybe not deep in the weeds of institutional assessment, those student learning outcomes, SLOs, are basically what the students should be able to do after a course or program.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it shifts the focus from just, did they pass the test to can they actually perform the function. What's really fascinating, I think, is that their philosophy actively rejects a compliance-first mentality. They're guided by six core pillars, but maybe three really stand out for how the DPT program works.
Okay, let's dive into those distinctions then. The one that jumps out immediately is centering students in equity. That sounds like a powerful statement for an assessment process itself.
It really is. It means they use assessment data not primarily to audit students or catch them out, but to enhance the institution itself, to ensure better outcomes and growth for their very diverse student body. It's framed as an internal improvement mechanism.
Okay. And that sounds like it leads directly into the second pillar you mentioned. Honoring community members' expertise.
Precisely. The Central Assessment Office. They act strictly as consultants and supporters. They're not top-down regulators telling everyone what to do. The academic units, like the DPT program, they own their curriculum, and they lead the assessment themselves because, well, they're the experts on the ground.
Right. They know their students and their field best.
Exactly. And this unit-level ownership, it feeds right into the third key pillar. Quality over compliance. Now, obviously, they have to meet accreditation requirements, middle states, and all that.
Sure, that's a given.
But they prioritize meaningful practice toward continuous improvement first. The other pillars they mention, things like transparency, collaboration, lifelong learning, those are really the sort of procedural infrastructure they use, like offering an assessment academy to make sure faculties are always learning how to assess better.
Got it. So we have this bedrock, this infrastructure of continuous improvement through HAP. And that context is critical for understanding the DPT program itself. This is a CAPD accredited program, and it's achieving some pretty remarkable results. You mentioned a 94% average licensure passage rate for recent grads.
Yeah, that's a strong number. But the truly distinguishing factor here, I think, is the program's explicit mission of service and equity. The program is actively committed to training a cohort of predominantly African-American physical therapists.
And crucially, their service focus isn't just like an abstract value statement, is it?
Not at all. They integrate it directly into the curriculum by serving under-resourced community members right there, local to the university in Northwest DC. They specifically mention the Lidrate Park area, so the expectation of service is literally baked into the degree.
That's quite powerful. It means the faculty aren't just teaching techniques.
Right. They are intentionally training students in these essential values. Cultural sensitivity, community service, self-inquiry, active learning, ethical behavior. They're not just training technicians, they're training practitioners who are inherently aware of the systemic needs of the vulnerable communities they're going to serve.
Okay, so you have this big, important mission. How do you take that and break it down into measurable steps over 3 years? How does the curriculum actually scaffold that kind of competence?
Yeah, it's a very deliberate flow. Year one is foundational coursework, the basics. But then crucially, they move students quickly into their first authentic clinical experience during that first summer.
Right away.
Right away, year two brings in more advanced courses, and then the second clinical experience in summer two. The final spring semester is the final big clinical experience, which leads directly into prepping for the national board exam.
You know, I found their discussion about how assessment evolves really interesting. They talked about moving competence beyond just rote memorization by openly discussing Bloom's taxonomy with students right at orientation.
Yeah, that's smart.
For the listener, maybe just a quick refresher. What is Bloom's taxonomy? And why does showing it to DPT students matter so much?
Sure. So Bloom's taxonomy basically describes different levels of learning. It moves from simple recall, like just memorizing facts, all the way up to complex intellectual skills, like evaluation and creation. So they show the students, look, in anatomy, you might start near the bottom, just learning terms.
Okay, memorization.
Right. Then maybe in kinesiology, you move up to applying those terms. But by the time you hit those advanced clinical practical exams.
Then you need to be at the top.
Exactly. Evaluation and creation. Independently evaluating a complex patient situation and then creating a novel tailored treatment plan. The assessment has to match that highest level expectation.
Which makes sense why their practical exams are so foundational then.
Totally. And they scaffold those too. They start as no stakes proficiency assessments, places where students can just learn the rubrics, practice the physical skills, understand the expectations without the fear of failure hanging over them.
That seems critical, getting that low stakes practice before the pressure cooker hits. Otherwise, you're just measuring test anxiety, not real competence.
Precisely. And then they transition to the high stakes assessments that demand that independent evaluation, clinical reasoning, complex decision making. You have to demonstrate clinical readiness at that point.
And that readiness gets tested in diverse real world settings, hospitals, outpatient clinics, complex rehab centers. Now, given how much variability there must be across those sites, how do they manage to keep the assessment fair and consistent for everyone?
Yeah, that's a key challenge. Standardization is the answer there. They use a single standardized evaluation tool. It's the official clinical performance instrument, the CPI, across every single site, no exceptions.
Okay, one tool for all settings.
One tool. And critically, they spend significant time training their preceptors. Those are the clinicians supervising the students at the sites on how to use that tool correctly and consistently. Plus site visits, ongoing dialogue between faculty, the director of clinical education, the student, the preceptor. It's a whole system.
I see. So the tool itself doesn't change, even if the patient situation is, say, really complex.
That's right. And they use the standardization to capture development even in those highly complex situations. They gave an example of a student working with an aphasic patient.
And just to clarify, an aphasic patient is someone who's lost the ability to communicate effectively, often after a stroke or a brain injury. Right. So typical verbal interaction is really difficult.
Exactly. Super challenging. And when dealing with a situation like that, those weekly feedback forms become really important because they capture not just the student's physical technique, but their ability to monitor their own communication, adapt their style, manage complex care under pressure. It really shows the development of nuanced clinical judgment.
Okay, that makes sense. So moving from the individual student's development up to the program level,
right.
How does the faculty manage tracking progress and, well, risk? With so many moving parts, it must be tough to make sure no student slips through the cracks.
They seem intensely proactive about it. The faculty hold weekly meetings specifically dedicated to discussing student progress, and they actively identify students who might be considered at risk.
Okay, so they flag them early. Then what?
Once flagged, that student meets with a formalized student development team. This includes their advisor, an educational specialist, the program director, and together they create a formal student success plan. And that plan isn't just filed away, it's continuously monitored and reviewed.
Wow, that sounds like a really intensive support structure. It definitely leverages that HAP pillar you mentioned, centering students in equity, making sure the institution steps up when a student struggles.
It really seems to. And this idea of a continuous feedback loop, it's also formalized right there in the classroom. They absolutely prioritize formative feedback, you know, the low stakes assessment, over purely summative end of term grades.
How do they do that? What does that look like in practice?
They use things like think, pair, share activities, concept maps, metacognition sheets, basically regular check-ins throughout the courses.
So they give students honest feedback and, importantly, time to address any gaps before those big high-stakes comprehensive exams at the end of the semester.
Exactly. And they mentioned something interesting. Students actually start asking for these low-stakes checkpoints. They realize these provide a much more accurate measure of where they actually stand clinically, way better than one single high-stakes test ever could.
That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Okay, this brings us to what I found maybe the most novel insight. This idea of the effective component. We're talking about things like engagement, clear communication, ethical behavior, even timeliness, basically. The hidden curriculum you need to succeed in a professional environment. How on earth do you explicitly assess those skills? Especially maybe for underrepresented students who might not have had prior exposure to specific clinical norms or expectations.
Yeah, this is where Dr. Altema's role as Director of Clinical Education seems absolutely critical. She frames the teaching of these skills not as, like, policing professionalism.
Right. Not just rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. But as coaching. Coaching focused squarely on the end goal, becoming an effective clinician who serves the community well.
Okay, coaching. So how does she make that hidden curriculum, those unspoken rules, visible and coachable?
Well, a big part of it is building transparency and trust. She apparently shares her own personal experiences, mentioning, for example, being first generation herself to relate to students and show vulnerability.
That builds connection.
Definitely. And then she explicitly coaches them on the specific written and verbal communication styles that are required in high-stakes clinical settings. Things that might seem obvious to some, but aren't always.
Could you give an example of what that coaching might look like?
Absolutely. It might involve, say, coaching a student step-by-step on how to write a professional email to a busy preceptor, or maybe how to respectfully voice a disagreement with a colleague about patient's treatment plan in a team meeting.
Okay, really practical stuff.
Really practical. These skills are often just assumed, right? But she makes them an explicit part of the learning and the assessment process, recognizing that they are just as vital to patient success as knowing the right mobilization technique.
That completely reframes the idea of competence, doesn't it? It really shows that being successful is just as much about who you are, how you communicate, how you engage ethically, as it is about the grade you got in anatomy class.
Precisely. And if we zoom out one last time, maybe the core piece of wisdom they offered for anyone involved in educational assessment anywhere is achieving buy-in.
Buy-in from whom? Faculty? Students?
Everyone. Faculty, staff, even the students themselves. Every piece of data, even a failure or a low score, has to be treated as an opportunity to improve the program. Fostering that appreciation for feedback, both giving it and receiving it constructively, ensures everyone is pulling towards that shared end goal. A competent, confident clinician ready to serve their community.
What a, well, really powerful system of intentional assessment design. We've seen their deep commitment to transparency, the really methodical scaffolding of competence moving from basic recall all the way up to complex clinical creation, and this powerful fusion of academic rigor with a deep-rooted mission of community service.
Yeah, and the Howard BT program really highlights that true competence isn't just defined by what a student memorizes or what technical skills they have. It's also about how effectively and ethically they engage with vulnerable populations. And this, I think, raises an important question for you, the listener, whether you're designing, say, a corporate training path or an academic course. How can you proactively assess for those critical effective skills like adaptive communication, ethical behavior, cultural sensitivity, rather than just waiting for compliance or external requirements to finally demand it?
That's definitely a challenge worth thinking about.